Hello, my name is Daisy, and welcome back to an episode of Psych Specifics. With us today is Professor Shopnox.
Hi!
How are you?
Good. You said my last name right. Nobody ever does that.
Thank you for sitting down with me today. Practice. Absolutely. Yeah. In Psych 101, students learn about the different perspective or subfields within psychology, such as cognitive, social, clinical, and so on. Which of these perspectives best describes your training or research area?
I would say broadly, it would be biopsychology. My graduate training was with a faculty member that was in an evolutionary psychology program, but that was nested within this behavioral neuroscience area that had a lot of crossover with chemistry and the biology departments. There was like shared facilities, which was really nice. So that allowed me to do animal research and use a lot of these different techniques of neuroscience to answer questions that were more questions that evolutionary psychologists try to answer.
So what specifically do you research currently?
So right now my lab is working on a study where we're exploring whether or not the gender of an experimenter actually has any sort of effect on the participant's hormones or behavior. In fact, you got to be a part of the very early protocol design. And so they're examining different salivary hormones, like testosterone and estradiol, and looking at whether or not there's behavior changes with participants if they're experiencing a male versus a female versus no experimenter. Yeah. And we want to know whether hormone changes happen and if those convey to behavioral changes.
Yeah. Well, I know if I was a part at the beginning, but I wanted to ask you, like, what drew you to that, to this specific topic?
So oftentimes in evolutionary psychology, we like to talk about interactions between individuals and how perhaps there might be some mating or competitive situations that lead people to behave in certain ways during those interactions. Mm-hmm. And so what I think my research adds to that is by having this neuroscience background, I can use the tools of biopsychology or neuroscience to sort of explain why these interactions might change. So by doing things like examining our physiology, maybe heart rate or galvanic skin response, or examining our salivary hormones, I can actually get at kind of the biological underpinnings of what is causing our behavior to change under different circumstances.
Oh my gosh, so interesting. I forgot how great this stuff was. Can you give an interesting finding that you saw?
We are preparing to go to a conference right now. So we measured risk-taking behavior when participants were in the presence of a male, a female, or no experimenter. Mm-hmm. And one of the cool things that we found was that both male and female participants take fewer risks in the presence of a male than they do in the presence of a female. So they're both being riskier in the presence of a female, which we did not expect. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty big effect that we found. When we look at the hormones, we didn't find significant changes in the hormones across the different conditions, but in general, the trend looks like for estradiol, females produce less estradiol when in the presence of another female compared to if they're in the presence of a male or no experimenter. Mm-hmm. And I think we need more data before we can make any sort of claims about that, but it could be that females are trying to suppress signals that other females would find threatening.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you explain for the listeners what estradiol is or what that does?
Yeah, so estradiol is a form of estrogen, and females produce high levels of estrogen when they're at times of the month when they're most fertile. And so from an evolutionary perspective, there's this idea that females might actually try to not show those signals of high estrogen to other females because that makes them competition. And so females can be sometimes pretty mean with other females, or it could cause them to maybe mate guard a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And so the fact that females are showing a decrease in estrogen whenever they're in the presence of another female supports this idea that potentially they're dampening those fertility cues when they're in the presence of another female.
So interesting. Can't wait to see what like your entire thing produces.
I'm excited. I know. We've gathered some voice samples from each of these conditions. And so that's kind of our next step, is to play the voices to other listeners and see if they can tell the difference between a female's voice, if she produces the same statement in the presence of a male versus a female. And we can actually look at the acoustics of their voice.
For the freshmen, if any of them are interested in your data or like wanting to partake in your research, do they have the opportunity to do that?
Yeah, like, so we gathered a lot of this data using Sonus systems. We do have to mask the true reason for our experiment so that people aren't kind of paying attention to the experiment or gender. So we did use some deceit when we gathered this data, but this data collection is currently complete. So in the future, if they want to be a part of rating these voices, then they could sign up for a voice perception study that will be posted in the fall.
Okay, that sounds great. So you know that psych is an incredibly interdisciplinary field. How do other disciplines outside of psychology integrate the findings of your study or your own research?
So I feel like evolutionary psychology naturally draws a lot on biology.
Yeah.
And that we actually use quite a bit of comparative animal information to inform theories. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we pay attention to things like, you know, how do bird songs amongst male birds, or bird coloration, how does that actually inform mate choice?
Mm-hmm.
And how could we apply those same principles to humans? Or we might look at other primates. So for example, when we're talking about these cues to fertility amongst human females, it's interesting, human females are one of the only primates that don't show really obvious cues to ovulation. So a lot of other primates show things like genital swellings or changes in coloration. And it's interesting that humans don't. So that's actually kind of fundamental to some of my research, because I want to know what hormones cause the display of those and what hormones are changing to actually prevent the display of those. So our finding that females have lower estrogen in the presence of other females suggests that we're actually trying to dampen those types of cues compared to when we're in the presence of a male. So we use a lot of biology theoretical bases, but we also draw a lot from anthropology. So we look at human behavior across different cultures and look at things that are universal, and if they're not, if they're different in other cultures, we try to understand, you know, what are the environmental contexts that might cause the selective pressure to be different within that culture compared to maybe a Western culture. And so we draw a lot from anthropology and even some sociology when we're thinking more about large group types of behaviors.
This kind of leads me to my next question, because you know that for Psych 101, JMU has a sociocultural error requirement, so meaning students are expected to understand people who are different and the importance of multicultural perspectives. How do you think about the role of culture?
Yeah, so certainly it would be false to think that evolutionary psychology doesn't take into account culture. It very much is interested in how has human psychology evolved, and the amount of evolution that's happened, the shaping of our brains has happened for the exact same amount of time for all humans that are living on this earth. So it is still an interesting question to think about how behavior or decision making can be somewhat universal, but it's even more interesting to look at cultures that have diverged from one another and think about how under certain conditions, you know, just like in animals, under certain conditions we would expect a trait to vary slightly. And so we would say that there's, you know, like multiple types of a certain species. We would expect that to be true for humans. In addition, I think it's important right now in this, you know, in the world in which we live, to also think that all human reproduction has happened via heterosexual reproduction.
Yeah.
But, and so the exact same evolutionary mechanisms that have shaped the human brain would shape people. But if their brain is attracted to somebody in a non-heterosexual way, we actually still like to think about how these, the mating preferences that they have apply.
Yeah.
They just apply to a different individual. And I think that's also a misperception of evolutionary psychology, is that we don't think about any non-heterosexual types of mating strategies, but
we live in a very heteronormative.
We do, but evolutionary psychology actually can have some really predictive value about how non-heterosexuals are going to behave.
What advice would you give to yourself back when you were a student in Psych 101?
I actually love teaching Psych 101 because I feel like it just gets back to some of the basics. And so I think anytime you can go back to those basics, I wish I had learned them better the first time. Mm-hmm. So the other thing I think would be really helpful for students is to think about all of the things you're learning and how does it apply to your own life? Because that's a really important memory mechanism. And yeah. I think if you can apply it to your own life, then you can start thinking about how important it is to your everyday behaviors as opposed to just trying to memorize the ideas. Because psychology is everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a psychologist to see it and use it and think about it. And I think it's especially important when we're dealing with interactions with people, and sometimes those interactions can be difficult, but you know, keeping principles in mind, like fundamental attribution theories, mm-hmm. are really, really helpful when you're in a disagreement.
Yeah, talking to anyone. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's more about, I think, recognizing your own biases and how psychology can affect your own behavior, yeah. more than like trying to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
If I could go back, I would say pay closer attention and try to see how it applies and how it could be shaping my own behavior and use that as I'm interacting with others.
I definitely do agree. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Of course.